Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Trying to get by Benning. Darnell Nurse left it in the corner. Gets up center. Perry scoops. Corey Perry.
Well, you're able to shake away from Solani. It's given away to Solani.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Forever Mighty Postgame Show. It's Eddie and Pat on the mics tonight to talk about the Ducks' 3-2 loss to the St. Louis Blues. It's tied for the second longest streak in Ducks history, no, Ed? Something
yeah.
like that?
Quietly, they kind of go about putting together the second worst losing streak in franchise history. Ties to two other times that they did that. And for anybody wondering, the longest losing streak in franchise history is 12 games. I think that was 2018. I'm pretty sure that we covered that, right? In the first inaugural season of this podcast?
Of course we did, yeah.
What a year to start. What a year to start a post-game show podcast, a 12-game losing streak.
We're probably the curse. I think we started the podcast at that time, and then the Ducks decided to have that epic, horrible season. And then have continued to have their slide. So I think we should take the hit for that. We'll be the ones to say we're the reason why. I think I'm good with that one.
I don't know if I'm good with that one. I don't want that on me. I don't want it on my conscience to feel like...
We'll blame Jason then. We'll just say Jason is.
Oh, we'll do what we always do. We'll blame Steven.
But we knew Steven was coming just subconsciously. And so the Ducks just decided to not play well. But... Dude, tonight, Zegras with his first point as a Duck, in a, you know, wasn't the prettiest. Raquel gets on the board. He's got some points. And the past few games, Comtois again. There's some positives again. This is another night where positives are being able to be pulled out from such a terrible season, which is like, just the beauty of it.
I feel like that's why it doesn't feel like an 8-game losing streak, right? Because... we had last game where Isaac Lindstrom scored a hat trick. We have Zegras making his debut and playing in 5 of these 8 games. You know, you have Maxime Comtois leading the Ducks in goal scoring. You have Max Jones scoring back-to-back power play goals in 2 separate games, right? Like, you've got the kid stepping up. Josh Maher comes into the lineup, right? Like, whereas previous losing streaks, you don't really have any positives to draw on. There really isn't anything going on. And it still feels like an 8-game losing streak, as Daniel puts in the chat. But there are at least some little things we can point to. Like you said, Trevor Zegras' first NHL point comes in like the final seconds of this game and means absolutely nothing. But it's a feel-good moment.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, you want to finally get that pass, right? I mean, he nearly scored a goal earlier in the game, but was just at the side of the net. And I got a comment on the chat. Everyone's talking about your lavish new place you're in. I can't tell if you're at a strip club or if you've got something like some UFO stuff going on, but it's very nice.
Gotta go with the purple lighting, man. It's on theme.
Everyone's talking about Eddie's not in a cave. Where is Eddie? Eddie's somewhere nice.
This is permanent now too, so it's not like I'm gonna be in a cave next time. So we have finally upgraded out of the cave after three years of doing this podcast.
Someone in chat said I look like Goro. I don't know what's Goro. Is that is that from Mortal Kombat? Is it that guy? The guy with the like four arms, whatever his name is?
I think so.
Is that who it is? That's I was just randomly like, wait, is that what I mean? I had to take the comment in the chat on that. It's funny. But yeah, man, I would have to say we got to talk about the lineup first. It was all across Twitter. Best lineup we've seen all season. And of course, I had to nitpick it. No Hampus and no Max Jones. And someone on Twitter mentioned that it was not Max Jones in the lineup, possibly because of him getting taking a stick in the face. But I mean, no, he came back in that game. But if that's the reason, he must have some serious dental work that had to be done. Maybe he wasn't feeling up to the task. But other than that, man, this is a really nice lineup. And they didn't play that at all. I mean, the Kills what sank the ship tonight.
Yeah, I think they actually played pretty well. And this is the first time I think Delorier's been scratched. And probably the first game of the entire season that we haven't had a Grant Delorier-Rowney, one of those guys making the fourth line. Right now you've got Heinen, Steele, and Backes in this game, so it's a bit of a switch up. And yeah, I think for Max Jones it probably wasn't a healthy scratch, as maybe it's a maintenance day or he picked up a little bit of a knock or something like that. And then the big downer here is if Hampus Lindholm wasn't on the IR, this is easily close to the best lineup the Ducks could probably ice if Josh Mahura stayed in over someone like Ben Hutton, which we know wouldn't have happened. We know if Hampus Lindholm was healthy, Josh Mahura likely checks out for this game. But we've been asking for a lineup like this for a while, for them to kind of ice the best players you have. Don't scratch a guy like Danton Heinen when he's actually producing. Don't scratch the kids, play them. And we got a little bit of a taste of that finally.
Well, yeah, and can we talk about that for a minute, about Hampus coming back and Mahura being the guy to take out of the lineup? What is it with the NHL? I mean, because I'm assuming that we're in this, tiny little small club city that we think we're the only ones that have these problems, but this is probably rampant across the NHL. You put in a young kid, looks good when he comes into the league. He's a defenseman. Your main defender's out, so he gets ice time. And then when your main defender comes back, you take the kid out, not the boat anchor. I don't understand the mentality behind what goes on with management, especially with our team. Because, like I said, we're in this tiny, small city, small team club. So we pay attention to every little thing that goes on. I just don't get it.
It has to be something that is more common on more teams. Obviously, we're a bit more in tune to kind of the Ducks problems and the Ducks roster issues, but for Josh Mahura, it's been three seasons now where he's played a handful of games, and usually due to injury or due to a trade or for some reason to kind of squeeze his way into the lineup. And then once everybody's back to being healthy 100% and the Ducks can ice their regular guys, he's back down to San Diego. I don't know if that's going to be the case for him this year, but you kind of feel like if Hampus Lindholm played right now, that whether it's Dallas Aikens or Bob Murray or whoever thinks that Ben Hutton and Jakob Larsson can do a better job than Josh Mahura, which I think it's evident they can't. Josh Mahura has produced every time he's come into the lineup, and he's been probably a better NHL defenseman every time than Ben Hutton and Jakob Larsson. And I get he has a favorable contract in the sense he's waiver exempt and he's easy to kind of send down to San Diego. And if you were to do that with Hutton or Larsson, they have to go through waivers and you potentially lose those guys for nothing. So I get the paper transaction side of it. But at some point, if you're bringing along young players and you want them to do well and you want to reward them for playing well, Josh Mahura has to nail down a roster spot because I don't think he's necessarily done anything wrong. He definitely hasn't done anything to warrant him being taken out of the lineup, but you just feel like it's inevitable once Hampus Lindholm comes back if everybody else is healthy.
When did Hutton become a Duck? Do you remember?
I think it was five.
Was it during camp or after camp? I'm trying to remember exactly.
I think the news came out just before the season started that he was joining the Ducks on a PTO, and then it took him a few games for that to kind of be signed and then for him to go through quarantine and train with the team and officially play. But it was, I think, just a few days out from the start of the season.
I mean, because like you said, he's been in this franchise for seasons now, not his first season. This is not Mahura's first camp. It's amazing to me they felt the need to go out and get Hutton to slot in front of a kid like Mahura. Those kinds of decisions were just always baffling me. That's kind of where I was going with this. And you look at the kids that have played tonight. I mean, I've been dogging on Terry a lot, and it's fun. But also, I would love to see that kid break out. I'd love to see him break out and have a Maxine Comtois season, right? Or even half of that. Just start scoring now and again. Again, tonight he looked dangerous, but you saw him scratched off and on. Now, I know maybe a guy that's producing and then falls off your bench and be like, come on, what's going on, or something like that. I don't understand the roster mentality, I guess you could say. Do you think we're going to see the same roster on Friday against Colorado? Because I just have the suspicion we're not going to.
Yeah, probably not. I'm surprised they went with the smaller, speedier lineup against a team like St. Louis, right? St. Louis is a big, heavy team. Taking out Grant and Delorier seems to be, I don't think it's a bad decision. I just think it goes against the grain of what the Ducks usually do, right?
And wow, holy shit, Eddie, we played better against them.
When you put more skilled guys out there, you tend to play better. And I would think that playing against a team like Colorado, it would serve better having guys like Heinen and Steele in the lineup over Grant or Delorier. But we've seen Dallas Eakins time and time again prefer to play those guys in big games. So I would imagine one, if not both of those guys are back in. David Backes likely comes out for that game, and we'll see somebody scratch.
Oh, for who? For
yeah,
Derek Grant?
I mean, we're going to get to this later on too, but that article by Eric Stevens where it talks about playing the kids, at this point you're bringing out, a Steele, a Terry, a Heinen, essentially, because he's still pretty young, or whoever, Sonny Milano, to play Derek Grant or to play Nick Delorier. Or, even though I like what David Backes has done, to play David Backes, right? It goes against what you should be doing right now. And one guy we don't even talk about because he's been injured all year, but Brendan Gooley is still a part of this team and a guy that eventually is going to have to work his way back into the lineup. We're talking about Josh Mahura losing his spot to Hutton or Larsson. When Brendan Gooley comes back, where does he slot in? And where, does Hutton and Larsson take his spot too? And they probably do, just because, again, of the contract situation and the fact that the Ducks seem to be set on playing those guys in that position.
No, it's true. So I want to get to a broader question when we talk about the Stevens article here in a little bit. But just speaking of the defense, because we're on that topic of conversation now, what is your ideal defensive lineup? If you had to put out the six guys,
it probably includes Drysdale at this point just to see him. I know that's a bit.
Yeah. I was hoping you'd say that.
But obviously, contract wise and even ability wise, Lindholm, Fowler, Manson, they have to be in the lineup. I think just based off the contract and the amount of money you spent, Kevin Shattenkirk has to be in as well. He hasn't looked as bad as he has, the month prior where he was just awful. I think the last couple of games he's improved slightly, not a lot. He still doesn't look that great. But then for that bottom pairing, right now, I would rather Josh Mahura and Jamie Drysdale over Ben Hutton and Jakob Larsson. You know, I know that's a lot to throw on Jamie Drysdale's plate, but just as we talked about Trevor Zegras earning a spot on this roster, I think Jamie Drysdale now, you know, 9 points in 12 games, AHL Rookie of the Month, like he deserves a couple games to at least just get a shot before he heads back to the OHL. So my ideal lineup for that bottom pairing is a Josh Maher or a Jamie Drysdale duo.
That would be fun to watch. I'm not so sure we're going to get a chance to see that. Do you think you actually think that he should be pulled up? And do you think that, so one, you think he should, two, do you think the Ducks pull him up before the OHL starts?
That's the tough question. I think the answer is I think he deserves it. I think the Ducks would love to give him a shot, but I think there's so many guys fighting for that position. You know, if Lindholm comes back and he's healthy, you know, you've got Josh Mahura, who just based on experience and play is a guy who deserves to be in the lineup over Jamie Drysdale. That's not a slight against Drysdale. It's just the point they're at in their careers at this point. And I think Josh Mahura deserves to be in over Jamie Drysdale, and they're not going to kind of move Hutton or Larsson out of the lineup. So you've got like seven or eight guys in front of you if you're Drysdale. So at the most it's, hey, you know, we're going to give you one game, not as a courtesy, but we're going to give you one game, you know, get your NHL debut, head back to Erie, dominate, come back next year, and, you know, fight for a roster spot. That's the only way I see him get in, not as a, hey, if you play well, you're going to stick around here for the rest of the year, just a, you know, we're going to hand you your NHL debut before you head back type thing.
Yeah, it would be interesting if they did that, but it's just not like this franchise to do something like that, right? It would be fun. But I don't see it happening. We got to talk about the Getzlaf play, because even his brother liked it. You posted the GIF, and Chris Getzlaf decided to like your tweet, because Getzy all of a sudden looked, I don't know,
vintage Getzlaf.
Like he was the same guy from 2016. Yeah, dude. Little spin off the boards, makes that nice feed across to Terry, who whiffs. Thank God. Maxime Comtois decided to stop celebrating and go and shove the puck in the net off a Blues defender, because he had his hands up. He thought Terry scored. I thought Terry scored. And I was like, oh, I got to go on the show and like totally eat crow on this. But no, that's not what happened. But what a play by Getz, man. It was beautiful.
So the point of Getzlaf's career where he's at right now is, you know, this is a every now and then type thing from him where he'll pull this move out of his kind of playbook that, you know, is probably 5 or 10 years old at this point, that you're not really used to seeing from him every now and then, but he's got that ability, right? And this isn't a play where, you know, he needs speed or anything like that. It's just a pure power and skill play. Just drives from behind the net, spins out to the front, and we all know Getzlaf's playmaking ability, and basically lays it on a plate for Troy Terry. All he has to do is tap it into the net, and he shoots it right into Binnington. Lucky for the Ducks, it kind of bounces around the crease a bit, and Comtois does what he does best and cleans up the mess in front of the net, grabs his ninth of the year. But, man, you know, Getzlaf, it's always nice every now and then, especially this late in Getzlaf's career, to just see one of those moments, whether it's this typical play here or where, you know, he'll kind of sling a cross-ice pass across to somebody, or, you know, he'll do a power drive to the front of the net. Just, you know, the vintage Getzlaf, we kind of get a glimpse of every now and then.
Well, I got to say, I hope next game we see Terry and Zegras switch. I want to see Comtois, Getzlaf, and Zegras.
I think that's what everybody's waiting for at this point.
I want to see that, because Comtois is on a roll. That guy is just banging home goals, and I feel like a lot of his goals come in from around like the lower half of the offensive zone, from the bottom of the circles in, which obviously is where a lot of goals are scored. But what I'm saying is, like, Zegras is able to get those passes through to a lot of guys who can't seem to bury him. I think that's a perfect opportunity to see that happen. I was just surprised it hasn't happened already, honestly. So hopefully we see that on Friday against the Colorado Avalanche. They're going to need all the offense they can get against that team too, especially playing a back-to-back. So that'd be a really fun Getzlaff line to watch.
Getzlaff always just seems like he kind of gets the leftover pieces thrown with him, right? Like the fourth line is the fourth line. It's always going to be the fourth line. And then for Getz, it's always like, okay, you know, Henrik, in the past it was Henrik, Silfverberg, and Raquel had a line that worked and gelled and went together. And then they had the kids line. And then it was like, okay, who's left? Okay, you're going to play with Getzlaff. And it kind of still feels like that a bit. And I think, you know, the fact that Lundestrom and Raquel have now kind of found a solid line mate in Trevor Zegras. I think he probably stays there for the time being just because they've looked so good and they look good tonight again. And you know, Zegras, you pointed out to this me before we started the show here that Trevor Zegras played the most ice time of any Ducks forward tonight, played over 20 minutes, which, you know, shows you how much they like that line, right? Like, you know, obviously his ice time has been slowly going up every game now, and he played 17 minutes last game, but he played with Lindstrom and Raquel last game. You know, he kind of got put on that line, and they're like, okay, we're liking what we're seeing, and clearly, even in a losing effort, they liked what they saw from that line tonight and how much they played Trevor Zegras. So I would imagine, you know, at this point in time, Lindstrom, Zegras, and Raquel is the Ducks' first line, just based on the amount they're playing on a nightly basis. As much as I'd love to see him with Getzlaff and Comtois, because I think that that's such an intriguing line to throw out there, I can't see them splitting up the line they have currently running.
But they should.
Yeah. I think Maxim Comtois is right at the front of the bus there and saying they hopefully split up that line and he gets to play with those guys.
It would just be the best opportunity for Zegras, obviously, in my opinion, to get to start racking up points, play with a hot hand up there. And I got to say, man, Getzlaff looked really good tonight, aside from just that pass. That guy's still creating space, coming off the half wall, exiting the zone. He still gets back defensively. He never had wheels, but I think lately he's looked like he's got some more speed in his step. So it's been a good few games for the Ducks, and they just can't seem to squeak out the win. You go back to the Vegas game and these last two games against the Blues. These are winnable games. So, I mean, everyone's dogging on Anaheim, right? And I get it. Like, 8-game losing streak we already talked about. No one likes to lose. But, dude, the past two games have not felt like we're watching a team that's just on this horrible, horrible run.
The thing is, I think if you talk to most Ottawa Senators fans right now, you know, they're down in the bottom of the pack with the Ducks and the Red Wings being, you know, one of the worst teams in the NHL. But I think most Senators fans would feel like this is a good season. They're happy with the progress this year. Tim Stützle's come in and looked excellent. Drake Batherson, I think, scored a goal in like 8 straight games and got pretty close to some elite territory in terms of players that he's getting on that list with, guys like Teemu Selanne and Wayne Gretzky, in terms of goal streaks under 21. You know, they're looking at progress there from a lot of young players. And I think, you know, you look at Anaheim right now, and the reason to me this 8-game losing streak feels a little bit different than others is because we're seeing progression from guys like Maxim Comtois and Trevor Zegras coming up and, you know, Isaac Lindstrom playing really well and guys just taking these step forwards that we've been waiting for a while. So, you know, it's an 8-game losing streak and it sucks. And I think if management was actually behind a rebuild, it'd feel a little bit better for everybody rather than, you know, there's a clear disconnect between what the Ducks really are and what Bob Murray thinks they are. So there is some negativity there, but it is a bit different, I think, than losing streaks of past where it does feel like there's some progression here and there is some kind of steps forward for this team to eventually get back to a point where, you know, we're having fun watching them and we're talking about winning streaks rather than losing streaks.
So I'm okay with the tank as long as we still have fun.
Yeah.
I think that's a
good way. As long as you still have fun.
Please go ahead and tank.
And you can see some positives come out of it, right? Like, there's clear progression from young players that bodes well for the Ducks' future. And I think we're seeing that from more than, you know, just a couple guys. Obviously, you know, Zegras getting his first NHL point hopefully is, you know, the proverbial ketchup bottle for him and that he kind of gets going over the next couple games here because he's had his chances for sure. I mean, he could have scored a goal tonight and he hit the outside of the post on the power play. You know, Maxim Comtois having 9 goals and leading the Ducks is huge for them. And Isaac Lindstrom could definitely have more than 5 on the season. And Eric Stevens referenced that in his recent article here, where Marc-Andre Fleury has robbed him twice this year. And he's had a couple other good chances where yep. I think Aiden Hill robbed him in overtime against the Coyotes. So, like, you know, Isaac Lindstrom could just be up there with 8 or 9 goals, which would be unbelievable. Like, even him being at 5 at this point and having a hat trick is something I would have never thought he would have been doing. So, you know, that progression itself is enough to get Ducks fans excited. But, of course, it's marred in managerial issues and, you know, a disconnect in direction from the front office and poor coaching from Dallas Eakins at times this year. So it's like you take some positives and you're immediately slapped in the face with the abrupt negatives that are surrounding this organization right now.
Says the guy who put Teemu Selänne crossing at his 8 in our lower third for the podcast.
It was too good to pass up. Joseph Roba sent me that on Twitter in response to our tweet about going live tonight, and it's just the perfect slap in the face to the organization. You make this video during the playoffs, and now it just serves a completely different purpose to mark an 8-game losing streak. We have a number 9 because Paul Kariya also did his.
We're not going to see that.
I can't do Paul like that.
We're going to
get to Paul like that. That's
yeah. And I love the chat right now. It's filled with our fellow podcast host, Broke Pete Davidson, ripping on us, rooting for the tank, saying that you hate Lundestrom. You have no faith. It's very sad. I mean, dude, even Shane says Eddie hates Sweden. Like,
I love Lundestrom. Where is this coming from?
The amount of hate you get on a nightly basis on our podcast,
they can't hate on my background anymore. So they've shifted to making things up. So.
You should not have said that. Do you realize when you say that they can't do something, now the chat's gonna be like, let's make fun of Eddie's background. It's just gonna be
they'll pick something out. I'll be too close to the camera, my lighting will be too weird or something.
Well, they already said you're too close to the camera.
Even with Steven in here, he's being chirped for his sniffles. And his sneezing. He's not even on the show, and he's being chirped in the chat for it.
Here, we gotta show Steven what you do. See, this is when you wanna mute the mic if you have to cough. Oh, you're back. Nothing, yeah. No one heard me cough. It's amazing. It's wonderful what that button does on the microphone. I don't know how Steven doesn't know how to use it, but we'll see. Maybe he'll learn as the season goes on. We're only halfway through his first season, so maybe he'll pick up some cues there. Yeah. Let's get into the Stevens article. We're about a half hour in. We're going to hit this. Plus, we got to get to your article, Mr. Mm-hmm. Ryder over here. Talk about your favorite player, Adam Henrique, and how sad you would be if the Ducks ever traded him away. You hate it so much, you wrote 5 good places you'd like him to go. So what do you want to start with first? You want to start with Stevens? You want to start with
Let's start with Stevens, because we were talking a bit about the kids and them needing to play a bit more. And I think it's kind of on par with the direction our conversation was going here. And I don't think I've seen Eric Stevens this, I don't want to say confrontational, but this, you know, kind of openly critical of the Ducks organization and management and coaching staff and their kind of usage and development of players, right? Like, I know he has more of a platform to do that now that he's with the Athletic, but even, you know, in his early days in the Athletic, he hasn't been overly critical of the Ducks in such a way. And I think it's warranted 100%. Like, I'm not criticizing him for it. I think, you know, good on him for calling them out, because I think everything he says in this article is 100% correct. You know, paraphrasing here, but basically saying, like, you know, there's no reason Trevor Zegras shouldn't be playing more minutes. You shouldn't be sheltering him away from key situations in the game. You know, Isaac Lindstrom taking a step forward this year means you should be playing him more. And it's funny, you know, this article comes out a couple days ago, and you look at this game, and, you know, obviously the Ducks didn't read this and aren't listening and basing their decisions off this, but it is funny you look at this and the fact that, you know, Zegras played 20 minutes tonight and led all Ducks forwards, and Isaac Lindstrom played, you know, around 17, 18 minutes tonight and looked great again, right? So they're playing the kids, but at the same time, Max Jones sat for David Backes, and so you get some good and some bad in that.
Well, they said he was in a lot of pain. That's what happened with him. So he was in too much pain to play. What is great about Stevens doing this, though, is he did it, but he still did it nicely, right? Like, he didn't say anything horrible, but I think it's great. Because the Ducks, I kind of feel like they secretly or quietly read every bit of any sort of interaction about the team, right? But then they don't do anything about it except those weird things we got a couple of years ago for, like, they sent they sent Jason mail on what he should be talking about.
They do, like, so many weird things.
They do weird stuff.
Earlier
like
today,
that,
I think it was their game preview article. They were referencing how Trevor Zegras got put on the taxi squad. And in that article, they said, oh, he might not play tonight. Like, because they're trying to explain away a paper transaction. Just say it's a paper transaction. We all know it's a paper transaction and that he's going to play tonight. But they're like, oh, he might not play. Like, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to make the fan base hate you more by kind
of... Do you really think that the fan base, like, all of them... Because a lot of people don't even know what that is, right? A lot of people don't care. They just want to watch the game. I'm not knocking anybody. But, like, a paper transaction, like, oh, what is that? Like, why would they have to do that? I get it. But for them to say that, though, was kind of like...
Yeah, but why are you hiding away from a paper transaction? Like, it makes it worse when you say, oh, he might not play, when you know he's going to play. Like, people latched on to that and were like, oh, okay, Trevor Zegras isn't playing. Here we go. It would make it so much easier to be less backlash if you just said, yeah, we put him on the taxi squad, you know, for cap reasons or, you know, as a paper transaction to kind of circumvent cap issues. Why are you hiding and shying away from that? It's not illegal.
Yeah, but this is the same club, though, that announces a signing or a contract like 3 days after it's already known. We're talking about the same organization that will tweet out their new contract to their new player after everyone in the world already knows everything about it and already talked about it. We've already all talked about it, and the Ducks are like, hey, by the way, we gave Adam Henrique a contract.
Somebody's in the chat. Michael Walters confirms Murray knows what's said. I would not cite that as a source. I would double check your sources there before we kind of confirm what Murray knows. I'm sure Murray is well aware of what is being said. I'm sure he's not, you know, checking Twitter and fan blogs every now and then, but you're not in that position if you don't have some self-awareness of kind of what's being said about the team on a kind of high level, right? So I'm sure he's well aware of what, you know, the fan base as a whole feels about certain players and about the way things are being managed right now. He knows he's on the hot seat, whether it's with...
They clearly listen to our show. And that's why they don't like us, and then they just do what they don't do what we like. So that hence what's happening.
We need to test that theory here. Just
tonight they played everybody we'd love to play, pretty much barring injury. We were like, that's perfect. Just do that. So what I did like in that Stevens article too, we talked about it earlier, is he was like, even when Lindholm comes back, play Josh Mahura.
Yeah,
like just let. He's basically saying, this is a lost season. It's what he said. Just have fun. Like you said, let's see development. Let's see progress with this team, progress with these players. Let's see what we got, because next year is going to look a whole lot different after the expansion draft. And Steven mentioned it in the last show, and he's, for someone who wasn't available for the podcast, my God, that guy's in our chat and like all over us. And I'm going to rip on him every chance I get to, you know, get to see his name pop up. But he said the same thing. What was I getting at? See, now I lost my train of thought. Damn it. No. This is where Steven got me back. No, what I was saying is, like, it's already a lost season. Just play what we got. And then what Steven said last night, now, you would know better than me because you know more about the draft and what goes on. Are they pushing the entry draft?
There's been talks about doing that because of how late the OHL is going to start. And the WHL just started... I think it was a couple days ago or last week now. So the time that these guys are going to get, and then when the draft is going to be, there's not going to be a lot of time in between to kind of assess these players. So they wanted to move it back and get some more viewings in and have, you know, team scouting departments look a little bit deeper into some of these players. I think if you don't know who these guys are at this point, even having not seen them play a lot this year, then you're not doing your job as a scouting department with an NHL organization. I don't think the draft needs to be moved back, but the NHL will capitalize any opportunity they can to either make money or increase their presence in a normally down time. So I could see them pushing it back a bit. But if they want to start for October next year, there's no point in pushing the draft back. You know, just keep it the same, unless you want to push it back a month to kind of give a break between the expansion draft and the NHL entry draft.
I think Steven said that they would just do the expansion draft this year and then do like a double entry draft next year.
No, thanks. I don't see the benefit to that, because not only does that...
not at the same time, yeah. But like...
Does that completely hamper scouting departments, and the fact that now you've got to not only scout one group of, you know, age group of players, you've now got to scout another age group of players in the same year at the same time. And then you've got a lot of these kids who will be going into their what would have been their draft plus one season, which is now, again, their draft year again, where they're going to be looked at and scrutinized and, you know, could have a down year or whatever after, and that will affect their draft stock. So I that would be the worst possible situation for me, is having a double entry draft, if they want to call it that. I don't see how that's a win for anybody, but the NHL has done some ridiculous things in the past, so that could be something they would do. I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, because I looked it up, and it was in the Friedman article. It says, some teams suggested December. I love the idea of two drafts several days apart in Montreal during June 2022. That would be insane, man. Like, that would be the one we would
have to go to, because we were going to go to last year's draft. But if there was a double draft, that's the only way I would ever like a double draft, if I was going to it and could see both. But
Well, let's just plan on it. Wherever the 2022 draft is, as long as we don't have a new virus and more lockdowns and all this crazy crap going on, let's do it. We'll go anyway, no matter where it is.
The top end of that draft is some ridiculous talent. You know, guys like Shane Wright and Brad Lambert, who I know is Steven's favorite because his name is Brad Lambert and he's Finnish. So I know he loves him. But yeah, I mean, you know, in comparison, this year's draft is okay, but it's sandwiched between, you know, the 2020 draft, which was just unbelievable, and the 2022 draft, which has, you know, some exceptional talent in the top 3 to 5 players. You know, Shane Wright broke or beat Connor McDavid's point totals from his exceptional status season. And, you know, he did that as a 15, 16-year-old in the OHL, right? So that's the type of hype you have around some of these players in the 2022 draft, whereas this year, it's maybe not the best year to tank. There's no, you know, dead-on number one. There's not even a race where it's like, oh, there's two guys, you know, like an Eichel Matthews Eichel McDavid or Matthews and Line A-type race. This year, it's like, you know, 5 or 6 guys could be number one. So it's one of those types of years for the draft.
Yeah, I want to see the Ducks get the lottery balls again, the ping pong balls, and they do it on TV, and then they make a whole thing out of it again. That's just what I want to see. You know all about the prospects and picks. Like, you could sit there and just rattle off these names, and I'm just like, I heard of that guy too. I don't know if he's good or not. Where is he from? Like, if you said Brad Lambert, I was like, oh, that's probably some American kid. No, he's from Finland. Like, you know, all these different things. I love the draft knowledge and like the prospect knowledge stuff, man. I need to find room for that so I can like banter back and forth to you on that, because you could seriously just talk for 20 minutes about the draft and I'd be like, so who do you think's...
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy, because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post, so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Going to be in the top five again, would you say?
There's some names out there this year. It's unreal. Chaz Lucius is an unreal name. I can't believe like that. Just and next year, there's a kid named Rutger McGrody.
Oh, I saw that in chat. I was like, is that real? It's like Max Power from
you know, they're both like, American, so I blame you guys for this one. But
yeah, whatever. They'll be jealous, dude.
Imagine a line of Chaz Lucius, Trevor Zegras, and Rutger McGrody. It's just an American trio in Anaheim with the most ridiculous names ever. I think this is the perfect time to head into a break before we get to the next part of the show here.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or, if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is, you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports podcasting experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join.
Well, before we get to your article, this is like a random NHL thing I saw tonight. I put it in our Twitter chat. It made me laugh pretty hard. Did you end up seeing the clip that I put in there of Draisaitl being questioned in postgame tonight?
It was a dumb question.
Oh, my God. The media says. So, you guys, should I just play the clip on air? Because that's...
He basically...
I don't even want to say it. Just play it.
It's... I mean, what answer are you expecting to that type of question? Like, it's one of those questions where, you know, as a player, you just see him, like, his expression, like, why are you asking that? Like, what do you think the answer is going to be?
Here it is. I have to play it. It's too funny.
Speaking of not good enough, your top players didn't produce much of anything in this series. Does it add to the frustration that you guys really didn't hold up your end of the bargain?
No, we love that. We love going without a point in 3 days for sure. It's great.
It's such a dumb question. Like, he's stumbling through that question, like realizing how stupid of a question is. Like, you guys really dropped the ball. Thanks, Toronto media. Like, what is that guy even there for? Is he there like to just rub salt in the wound for the Oilers players, and he's just getting something out of it,
dude? That's like literally, we used to save clips of this stuff. We got to start doing that. Or anybody in chat or anyone listening, send us funny clips you guys hear from around the league, because we love doing that and playing these things on air, man. Jay and I have found so many over the years, but that one, it's like they lost 3 in a row. They were shut out twice in 3 games and they just lost 6-1. And he's like, so are you guys disappointed? You guys didn't, he even said, like, you guys didn't hold up your end of the bargain.
He basically went up there and said, how do you guys feel about shitting the bed? Like, Shane's putting in the chat, he basically, like, he said, do you guys not like scoring? Did you guys even try? So you sucked. Is that a thing? Is that normal?
Oh, it's so good, man. That was one of my favorite clips I've heard all season. Let's get to your article, man. We're well, 42 minutes into the show. We got the last bit here to take questions and your article. My favorite destination out of all of them that you put in here, though, was obviously the the New Jersey Devils, and that's the first we talk about.
I mean, anytime you put together a trade rumor or trade, you know, discussion article, it's always going to spark discussion. So I posted this article in the Reddit of every team that I had listed in this article, knowing full well that most of it would get some hate or at least generate some discussion. So I was surprised with how many people in the New Jersey fan base did not want Adam Henrique to come back or didn't feel like there was a need for him.
Probably because his contract.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, they're a team that next year with the money coming off, they're going to need to hit the cap floor. They're going to be one of those teams that are again, right near the bottom in terms of total cap hit. They've got Gusev coming off, Palmieri's coming off, a few other guys. Ryan Murray's coming off the books. So they've got, you know, a few deals. I think Zajac's big deal is expiring. You know, some of these guys will come back, but a lot of them for less than they're currently making. So
I just, the problem I couldn't see, the problem I could see coming up is the Ducks are just not going to hold on to any money. That's in your proposed deal. Adam Henrique, Ducks retain $2 million. Anaheim receives Mikhail Motsev plus a 2021 third round pick, which is Arizona's pick. I just can't see the Ducks are like, hey, we're finally getting money off the books. Let's just pay a guy not to be here again. Other than that. Not bad. But I think I like the story of him going back.
Yeah, it just makes sense. And
everyone likes that. It's such a hockey
thing. You know, he's a familiar face for the organization, not so much the players that are there. Somebody pointed that out to me. Like, you know, the only guys that are still there that he's played with, there's only maybe like two or three guys from his time when he was with the Devils. But as like a fan base and an organizational player that they remember and they remember fondly, I think Adam Henrique kind of fits there. And the thing for all these trades, they have retained salary because, you know, I put this article out right after he cleared waivers. And, you know, it kind of became apparent at that point that the only way the Ducks were going to move him is if they retained some money on that contract, because there's he almost makes $6 million, which is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think we give credit enough to just how bad that deal is when you look at it.
He scored 26 goals and had 43 points.
He did, but even at that, you know, is that $6 million worth?
I don't have the problem with the $6 million. It's the longevity of the contract. That's what it comes down to.
The term's a lot worse than the fact. I mean, if he only had 2 years left, then, you know, the 5.8 is not as bad. But the fact that he's got, you know, this year plus three more, it doesn't look too great. And he's not having a great year this year. I mean, he kind of proved the doubters wrong a little bit in his first game back from, you know, going on waivers and being scratched. He scores in that game, so he kind of proves us wrong a little bit there. But, you know, he would be a good fit for Anaheim. And I think the one thing you have to remember here is, like, you're trading him at almost an absolute low in value right now. These deals that I have in this article kind of represent that, is you're not trading him as 26 goal scorer Adam Henrique. You're trading him as slumping, aging veteran who makes $5.8 million for the next 3 years and just cleared waivers because there's no trade market for his contract. So you kind of have to take that into account in terms of what you're getting in return.
I got to tell you, my favorite part of your article, though, aside from the trades you put together, was the comment that said Eddie J equals drunk, which, if that guy knew you, that's not possible. Like, you don't get drunk.
Was that a comment that said that? That's news to me.
Devils fan here. In order for us to give Anaheim Maltsev, they need to retain 50% of Henrik's salary, and it would be for Maltsev straight up, no picks.
I like how he's okay with Henrik for Maltsev straight up, but the third round pick just throws him over the edge. Like, the third round pick is just a big thing. I mean, you know, I expect that from these articles. Trade articles are the biggest bait out there to just get hate, because everybody loves their guys more than anybody else, right? You know, if you're saying, you know, you're trading Sonny Milano or Josh Mahura. Their league-wide value isn't as much as the value we put on them as fans, right? We always overvalue our players. I mean, the Troy Terry.
Can you throw your article link in the chat? They're asking for it.
I might be able to, yeah.
Also, I was going to, now that we're doing this real quick, I think DB Lowry said, did you guys see the clip on Sportsnet where the anchor said he'd take Matthews over McDavid? Yeah, I would too.
You would take Matthews over McDavid?
Yeah, he's American. He's American.
I don't think I would ever do that.
I want the least amount of milk baggers on my team possible. So,
yeah, kind of works. I was disappointed in Matthews tonight because I have him on my fantasy hockey team and I saw the Leafs were up 6-1. I'm like, oh, he's got to be involved there. 0 points and 7 shots on goal. Jason Spezza had like 3 points in that game. But yeah, wrapping up this article, I had to trade, to the Coyotes. That one was probably my favorite and probably the one I knew that I would receive the most hate for because there was a player involved for the Coyotes prospect, Jan Jenik, who, that Coyotes fans clearly love and value a lot higher than I did because I got a lot of straight, no, absolutely no way in hell this guy should be involved in this trade. But it was Henrik at $1.5 million retained plus Larson and a third round pick for Jason Demers, who's on an expiring $3.5 million contract, Jan Jenik and a 2021 fourth. So, I mean, out of all the destinations I had here, which was New Jersey, Ottawa, Minnesota, Florida, and Arizona, I felt like the best fit for Adam Henrique in terms of, team side and player side would be Arizona. You look at the fact that Lawson Crouse was in the top six, had one assist in 15 games, and he's playing in their top six. And Tyler Pitlick had 5 points in 15 games, or 5 points in 18 games, and was playing in their top six. And outside of Dvorak, Keller, and Garland, and Nick Schmaltz, there's no goal scoring on that team and no point producers. Adam Henrique seamlessly fits into that team as a second line center. You can move Nick Schmaltz back to the wing because I think he was rocking a 38% face-off win percentage at that point in time when I wrote this too, which is not something ideal from who's a guy who's supposed to be your first or second line center. He just kind of fits that organization well. And an organization that's dropping a ton of cap space at the end of this year. Antti Raanta's $4.5 million deal is gone. Nick Yarmolson's gone. Jason Demers is gone. Alex Goligoski is gone. There's a few other guys on their roster that they shed massive salaries for, and most, if not all of them, won't be back, especially at those deals that they had them on before, significantly reduced.
So do you think he's even moved at all? Let's get to that. Do you think he's going to move?
I honestly would have said at the point when I wrote this that it was inevitable. I just felt like, they hadn't played him for, I think, 3 games. They had clearly tried to trade him. They had put him on waivers to try and get somebody to take him. And you felt like the next step was, they're just going to have to retain salary and trade him. But now he's been in the lineup for the next 2 games. And, his name has still kind of been on the list in terms of tradable assets the Ducks have. But that's amongst other names like Heinen and Raquel and others, right? And those are, yeah.
And Sylvie. Sylvie's being brought into that discussion too. And that was one of them that was on the other Stevens article talking about moving the old guys out, moving the vets out. He didn't say old guys, but moving the vets out, that there's talk about those, Silverberg being a guy on that.
And some of those are just easier contracts and easier players to move. Like Ricard Raquel is the easiest guy you have to move despite his struggles this year because that deal is just so good. And the previous production is there. Right. And you could just imagine a team like Toronto or a competitive team saying, if we bring this guy into our fold and our offensive system, we're going to see that player that the Ducks saw when he scored back-to-back 30 goal seasons. Right. Like there is so much promise from, anybody trying to seek out a trade for Ricard Raquel, which is why I think the most interest of any Ducks player right now is around Ricard Raquel. He just fits so many players' wish lists at this point in time And I think Danton Heinen is an easy option because he doesn't make a ton of money and the term isn't long. So I think they're and he's played well this year, right? And he fits nicely on it.
When he's been given the opportunity to play. Yeah, that's the thing. The other thing I wanted to ask you about the trade deadline, since we've been on that topic now. Did you have a chance? Have you been on the show to talk about Jake Virtanen?
I don't think I have. I think me and Steven chatted about it when it first came out. Yeah, I think when the first kind of talk we did about Virtanen and the rumors, it was Steven and I who were on the show and we chatted about it a bit. But there's been so many more developments since then in terms of like who could be rumored to go back and why the deal isn't getting done. And it's just so ridiculous that this deal.
I mean, they're saying it's like the salary, 1.7 mil goes to 3.4 mil. And the Canucks don't want to eat it. And then it's believed there are more pieces. Another player or draft pick would be like, really?
The moving parts that the Ducks are willing to go through right now to make this deal done, you know, it makes you think that like this is all Bob Murray's focusing on right now is trying to get Jake Virtanen in. And I don't know why you're putting this much focus to bring in a player like Jake Virtanen. You know, especially if it means...
It's a change of scenery thing. It's like the article said. Like, that's what I was reading about on it. And I was like, really? But this guy's never been
amazing
anyway. I don't see
change of scenery deals usually mean like a guy did well somewhere else, went somewhere, didn't play well. And now a change of scenery, you're hoping, okay, he can get back to what he was doing before. The thing is with Jake Virtanen, there's never been a point in time where you're like, where he's been good. You know, right? There's never really been a time where you're like, oh yeah, he's a top six forward. And when you look where he was drafted, same draft as Nick Ritchie, but I think Virtanen went 6th overall. In that draft, and it's you know, why are you seeking it? Why are you pushing so hard to get a player like this? And the rumored deal that's going on now, I think I put it in our chat. It was from 31 Thoughts by Elliot Friedman, and he said that the Ducks are grinding away on a Danton Heinen, Jake Virtanen deal, and that they might try and get the Canucks to take on Derek Grant's contract as a sweetener to get this deal done. And you know, yeah, it would be nice to kind of shed that contract, but it's not like it's really hurting the Ducks to have Derek Grant on there.
Jesus.
And giving up Danton Heinen and potentially a pick to kind of get that deal done just to take Grant's contract. The Ducks aren't in a position to be making those types of deals. They need to be selling players for future assets, or if you're going to bring in a player, it's a guy who's a proven goal scorer that's going to kind of fix the problems you have.
Well, I mean, he did have 18 goals last year and 18 assists, 36 points in 69 games. He has 1 point this season in 21 games.
Yeah. And he's being used.
So maybe not like the worst.
It's not the worst deal ever,
but
And you know, it's a bit dramatic to sit here and say it is the worst deal ever, but it's just one of those deals where if you're the Ducks, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense why this is kind of the one thing you're focusing on and pushing for at this point, right? You know, at this point in time, whether you think Virtanen could be more or not, Jake Virtanen is a fourth line player who is not generating any offense this year. 1 goal in 21 games. Danton Heinen has more production on your team than that right now. I don't know why he would be the guy you'd be giving up. I'm fine with...
I mean, Heinen hasn't... I mean, he had one really good season in Boston. And then after that, it was he's mediocre, and he's kind of trailed off point-wise. I mean, I know he has other aspects to his game. I don't know enough about Virtanen to, his defensive side. I don't know if he's that kind of player. But I just... It wouldn't bother me necessarily. I think the only thing that I would be upset about is like, this is what we're focusing on rather than trying to get picks. Like, we need picks coming in. I mean, that's how you rebuild. And, or you're able to like throw massive assets like a Raquel, a Silverberg at really good young players. But you kind of just, maybe they're waiting for that coming like, when it creeps closer to April 12th for the trade deadline.
The reason this is so frustrating, and DB Lowry kind of nails in the chat here, is it's just another, you know, deck shuffling move by Bob Murray. He's just moving around the deck chairs out there, and it's really not doing anything. Like, he references the Cogliano for sure deal, where it doesn't do anything. And even the Nick Ritchie for Danton Heinen deal, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't make a change. It's a lateral move. You're just replacing one average player with another in hopes that.
Well, we have less penalty box time. Heinen doesn't sit in the box as much as Nick Ritchie.
Yeah, but
Nick
Jake Virtanen does. So.
Yeah. He's a big kid too,
right? In that last draft. So he's in that draft that we were talking about for so long with Nick Ritchie, where teams were victim of the kind of big player, focus, the big grinding player who could shoot the puck. That's why the Canucks took Jake Virtanen 6th overall. That's why the Ducks took Nick Ritchie 10th overall, and why a player like David Pastrnak went, later than both of them. Dylan Larkin went, I think, 15th overall in that draft, right? Is they were still focused on size. And here's Bob Murray, who moved out Nick Ritchie, admitting he had made that mistake, and is looking to bring in Jake Virtanen, who is arguably the same type of player in the sense that, he got taken way higher than he should have because of the skill set that teams were looking for at that point. And that's the most frustrating thing about this, is it is just kind of one of those deals where it's a typical Bob Murray deal. He's moving around, some players. He's doing the one-for-one deals. It's a lateral move. Doesn't really change anything. And he's hoping that out of nowhere, this player is just going to all of a sudden take off in their system. It's not like the Ducks are, a dynamic offensive system where you can bring in, like the Leafs, right? Like Toronto's a prime example here. Jason Spezza comes into that team. And Jason Spezza's a good player, but he's well past his prime. But I think in the 81 games he's played with the Leafs, he's got like 41 points because he's in a system where it just works well. And they're such a good team and such a dynamic offensive team that he works there. It's not like if you brought Jake Virtanen into the Leafs, 100% he's going to do better than he does in Anaheim. It's a deal that makes sense other places. I'm not sure it's a deal that Anaheim should be pursuing and putting this much effort behind. Like, why are you grinding away over 2 weeks now at a deal to get Jake Virtanen when you could be something else to improve the team? Because I don't think Jake Virtanen improves the team. If it turns out it's a Heinen for Virtanen deal where, somehow the Canucks take Derek Grant, maybe, you're opening a roster spot up for younger players. That's the only positive there.
But it's not really driving any sort of change here in the system for sure. Let's move on, man. Do you have any questions we want to take from chat tonight, or you got anything else you want to add before we get to the wrap point? We're at the hour mark on the show. Usually we get to our questions and then call it.
I don't see any now, but if anybody does have any questions, just shoot them in the chat. And while we're wrapping up the show here,
we'll give you guys 10 seconds, and then Eddie will change the color of his backlighting to green.
I can do that. Our audio listeners love this right now, by the way.
They totally love this. It's the best. Let's talk about the schedule for the next show, right? We're doing it Saturday. There'll be you and Steven on the podcast on Saturday night against the Colorado Avalanche.
Fun. Yeah, it should be. What is that, Friday night?
It's both. That's back to back.
Friday, Saturday.
So it'll just be Saturday. Yeah, it'll just be a Saturday night. You guys get to cover two games. You guys get to cover both Avs games. That's that's always a prize. Like
10-game losing streak, thanks.
No, we're not going to see it. They're going to win on Friday against the Colorado Avalanche. The one question that's trickled in this chat is from Shaney. So is there any Ghoulie news? Do we know what the hell's going on with that kid?
Which is slightly concerning. I can't remember the prognosis that he had at the beginning of the year, but I didn't think it was this long. Where we're, 2 months into the season now, we haven't seen him. I believe I thought it was a 6 to 8 week time frame. If I remember
so, he just returned. He appeared in 5 games with the San Diego Gulls during his conditioning on loan, but failed to register a point. That's the last news that came around. That was 3 days ago.
Oh, so he's played with San Diego?
Yeah, he'll need to be removed from the injured reserve before he's eligible to play, but he could return to Anaheim's lineup as soon as Monday against the Blues. But that was 3 days ago. So that was on the 28th. That was on Sunday.
I can't believe that I missed that he played the last 5 games with the Gulls. I haven't been watching too many of the Gulls games since Trevor Zegras left, but that is surprising. Well, maybe we'll see him a little bit sooner.
Just as he appeared in five games with the San Diego Gulls during his conditioning loan, but failed to register points. So let's see what his last game was. That's really interesting.
I don't think he played tonight, because I was looking at the lineup earlier today, and I'm pretty sure he didn't play. But, you know, for me, it'd be interesting to see kind of where he slots in and where, if the Ducks even bring him up at this point. Like, that's not an impressive five-game stint, and not to say he should have 5 points in five games, but, you know, from a couple people in our chat that have been watching the games have said he hasn't looked too great since his kind of conditioning stint down there. And when you look at it, Josh Maher is struggling to get into the lineup of guys like Ben Hutton and Jacob Larson when Hampus Lindholm's playing and healthy. I don't know how Gouley gets in unless he starts playing.
The AHL doesn't track ice time.
No, or I don't think so.
Or the AHL.com site. He played the 19th, the 20th, the 24th, 26th, and 27th. Those are the only games he's played, and he's even. And he has 3 shots on goal total and 6 penalty minutes.
Yeah. I mean, he's never been a guy who's going to light up the score sheet. But when you have, you know, Drysdale doing what he's doing down there, as much as, you know, that Gouley has more NHL experience than Drysdale right now, it's hard to justify bringing him back in the lineup. And I know it's his first taste of hockey and playing this year at all, having been out with injury. But, you know, how do you play him over Josh Maher right now? And how do you play him over Hampus Lindholm when he comes back? You know, I think Josh Maher has earned that call-up that he got, even due to the injury. I think he's earned a roster spot at this point, and it's hard to look at Gouley and be like, yeah, you just have to put him back in the lineup. I don't think he's justified that right now, where, you know, he's a Lindholm-type lock, where when he's healthy, he's in.
So let's move on to the last. We'll take this last question from Shane. It's was it Shane who asked it, or who was it here? Dave. Putting in the chat. It was Dave. No, it wasn't Dave. He said, did the Ducks need to play Miller more? But there was a question about Gibby. It's DB Lowry. He says, is Gibby's recent struggles this month really as bad as the stats say? It's a good question.
A lot of it, again, we say this with John Gibson all the time, is it has to do with the team in front of him and the way they're playing. And this defense core in front of him is a mess. Hutton and Larson is a bottom pairing, is not ideal. As much as I've praised Johnny Hakimpa this year, and I don't think he's necessarily done bad, he's not a guy you want in your top four. Kevin Shattenkirk hasn't looked great. And Cam Fowler has been, I guess, the, you know, kind of the lone bright spot for this defense corps. And I know there's a significant portion of this fan base that doesn't like Cam Fowler. And you know, I would be on the side that does agree that, you know, the money he makes probably isn't what he's worth at this point. But he's not been bad. Like, he's got 11 points in 22 games, you know, across an entire season. That's, you know, 40 plus points. That's a good year from Cam Fowler. That's a very good year from Cam Fowler. I can't complain with the way he's played. I think a lot of those points too, I think at least 4 or 5 of them have come on the power play recently. So you can't really complain with what he's done outside of Cam Fowler though. And I guess outside of the limited time Josh Maher has had, nobody's looked good. You know, Kevin Shattenkirk is severely underwhelmed. That bottom pairing has not looked good, and they've struggled. Josh Manson, when he's been in the lineup, has not looked good. Hampus Lindholm has been good, but I don't think he's been as good as we've seen him over the last couple of years.
I think Lindy's having a good year.
He's having an okay year. I mean, he's got six points in 18 games, but the last, you know, last year he had 23 and 55. Struggled a bit before that with 28 in 76. You know, he's a guy who's going to be routinely around 30 points, so it's not a bad year from him. But if I had to say who's been better this year, you know, who's been more impactful to the Ducks lineup between Fowler and Lindholm, I would have to say
offensively, Cam Fowler. I would say Cam.
Yeah. I mean, Cam still makes his mistakes defensively, the routine mistakes we're used to from Cam. And that contract's always going to be the sticking point for a lot of people. The term and the amount of money he makes is going to be what a lot of people base their kind of decisions and their opinions on Cam Fowler off of. But I still think he is a valuable member of this Ducks team. And I think there's players you should seek to move over him, right? Like, I think Adam Henrique is a guy that you could move before him. I think Silverberg's a guy you could move him. Obviously, Rickard Rakell's contract is easier to move, and it's one that's going to be enticing to other teams. Like, I still think Fowler has a valuable role to play on this team, even if he's making more money for longer than we would like.
Yeah, to speak about Gibby, though, he's not having a great year. You see flashes where he's had great games. Like tonight, though, doesn't help him. Three power play goals against, right? On, but did they even crack 20 shots on goal, the Blues?
I don't think so. It was not a strong night for them.
He hasn't been phenomenal. He's had flashes where he's been really good. But I'm not about to sit here and bash Gibby. That's probably the last guy on this team that I would ever say something bad about. He's carried this team through and through for seasons after season now. And the Ducks are literally wasting his prime. And we've said that before. We don't need to get into a giant conversation. You look at the advanced analytics stats on goaltending, it's not really pretty for Gibby.
Especially after the start he had.
He's sitting at a negative goal saved above the average. Save percentage is a little low. I don't know what's going on other than the team in front of him is not good.
Yeah.
So that definitely has contributing factors.
And it's
to
a
it.
Tough time to
we
play.
We haven't seen like the game stealing.
It's
saves,
a tough
right?
time to play for him, right? Like, as much as you know any other player could check out, it's really tough as a starting goaltender and a guy who's, you know, Miller is not going to play too many games. You know, Gibson's going to play almost every game that he can. And the Ducks are going to play him almost every game that he can. And you look at the last five starts, 5 goals against, 4 goals against, 3 goals against, 4 goals against, 3 goals against. Every game is below .900 save percentage. Like, it's been a rough last 5 games for John Gibson after an exceptional start to this season where he was really the only good player on the Ducks and he was keeping them in it this year. Now it's kind of back down to earth. And I wouldn't blame the guy for checking out, to be honest with you, right? Like,
Let me ask you this last question to wrap the show then, because this is a good one right along this. We'll end the show on this one. Do you think management and the coaching staff have lost the room?
Man, I feel like we get this question every year, eh? Dating back to the Randy Carlyle days. Has Randy Carlyle lost the room? I don't know. I don't think so. I think there's a lot of kids in this room, so I think
a lot of veterans in this room too that aren't playing while they're getting benched.
Yeah, I don't think they've lost the room, but I think the motivation, it's not there. I think this team knows what they are. I think the voice coming down from management saying we think you should be better is one that the players look at and say, you know, kind of how? You know, how are we supposed to be better? Look at the team we have. I think they're a bit more realistic. I mean, again, this is all speculation on my part, but I think it's a lot of the same as how we feel, where, you know, we kind of know what this team is, and this is what we expect from this team, right? This is not an 8-game losing streak, but being near the bottom of the Western Conference and being near the bottom of the NHL. That's just the reality of how this roster is constructed. But you've got a guy running this team right now who thinks they should be better than they are and is basing his decisions in terms of benching certain players and you know, eventually player movement and roster management on his vision that this team is a playoff team or a team that's in a win now mode. I think that could not be sitting well with a few players, especially some of the veterans, because I think Ryan Getzlaf clearly knows what this team is. I think, you know, David Backes has been around long enough to know what this team is. I'm sure Adam Henrique has been around long enough to know what this team is. And, you know, Getzlaf and Henrique have been around when the Ducks were a good team. They know the difference between a good Anaheim Ducks team and a bad Anaheim Ducks team. And I think they can very well see where this team is at right now. So there must be some frustration there from them when you hear from management that, you know, they're not giving enough and that this team can be better and that guys have to step it up or they're going to get scratched or they're going to be out. And then the response is, you know, we're going to bring in Jake Virtanen and get rid of Danton Heinen. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's something to it. It's been said year after year now for about 2-3 years that this team, they lost the management and the coaching staff have lost the room. I think there is a really strong possibility where the coaching staff probably feels like that, and management probably feels like that. That would make a lot of sense when it comes to the benching. It would make a lot of sense if you want to extrapolate pieces of of what Dallas Aikens has said to reporters. Competition. Some guys don't like it. Comments like that. And when you see veterans get benched like Henrique, I think it's a strong possibility. And I think the reason why we're going to see a lot of these guys get moved at, the deadline or near, I would think it's going to happen. Again, I don't have any inside information like you, but all those names don't just pop up. Anaheim's a pretty low-key, talk about our players. Bob Murray got pissed. What was the deal he was doing with Carolina and it fell through? It was for Justin Falk.
Yeah, it was Andre Cashman and Justin Falk.
And Murray got pissed and the deal fell through because there were people talking about it. Like, this team does not like people talking negative about them whatsoever. And now you got rumors floating around all over the place about different guys. I think that where there's smoke, there's fire for sure. That's cliche as hell to say. But this is not every year we hear about mainstay guys getting moved and getting benched. I think there's a serious issue with this team inside the locker room. And I'm, as much as it hurts these guys, because, that's what they do for a living, you don't want to have to pack up your family and move. I'm excited to see what happens as we inch closer here. So, I'm going to lean on the side of it, of things being sour.
I think clearly the organization is not happy getting this much attention for the wrong reasons, right? Like, when you look at the worst teams in the league right now, like, Detroit and Ottawa aren't getting attention for being bad because they knew they were going to be bad.
They never said they were going to be good.
Everybody knew they were going to be bad. And, like I mentioned earlier on the show, on the Ottawa side of things, even though they're so bad this year, people are looking at it like it's a positive for them. There's progression from their young players. They don't have a good roster, but they're seeing, some young guys take step forward. And Detroit's supposed to be bad. And I think you're getting with the Ducks now is on par with the media attention that the Vancouver Canucks are getting for being bad, and that the Buffalo Sabres are getting for being bad, where it's pure negative press. And it's like, your team is bad. You think they're supposed to be good, but they're not. And now, all these guys are available and it's a dumpster fire. And, the Ducks are clearly sellers. I think if you went around and asked a lot of, whether it be, executives in this league and said, who do you think are going to be the biggest sellers this year? I'd find anybody hard pressed to say, anybody other than Anaheim right now, in terms of just the sheer amount of players who could be available.
Buffalo.
Yeah, too. For Buffalo, I think, the big headline, of course, is going to be Jack Eichel and the fact that he likely could be moved at this point. But when you look at Anaheim, it's like, who isn't available? You're not asking who is available. You're asking who isn't available in Anaheim, because I think that
Gibby Fowler and Lindholm. That's
and
Zegras, about it.
And that list Zegras, is a lot smaller.
And the kids. Yeah, I'm not gonna count the kids.
But you've got a lot of players available there that I think would interest a lot of teams. So all of a sudden Anaheim's in the press nationally for a negative reason. And I'm sure that doesn't sit well with owners. I'm sure that doesn't sit well with Bob Murray. I'm sure that doesn't sit well with the team. And it doesn't make for a fun, atmosphere in the locker room, especially losing 8 games a row on top of that.
No, it doesn't, but we'll see what happens there. We have some more fun coming on Friday and Saturday. We'll have the game, it's like at 5:00, I think, is on Saturday, and a 6:00 game on Friday. So early games here coming into the weekend. Eddie and Steven will be on the podcast on Saturday night because it's back-to-back, so no podcast Friday. So go ahead and tune in to Twitch. But you'll be on Twitter, right? We'll be posting stuff on Twitter for Friday night's game, so I'm sure you'll be active. You guys got nothing to do with Canada anyway. It's freezing, snowing.
Hopefully we get some action, too. Some Ducks news coming out, because something's got to change here. So hopefully, we've been saying that for the last 7 or 8 shows, but you would think that something's coming down the pipeline soon.
At least a Zegras goal, at least a win on Friday. Hopefully get a win on Friday. But thanks, everyone, for tuning in, and we'll talk to you guys Saturday night.
Zenni's blocks lenses help to protect the eyes by keeping harmful blue light out. Because they're virtually clear, add blocks to any Zenni frame for stylish, all-day protection. Get a complete pair of prescription or non-prescription blocks glasses starting at just $24. Protect your eyes now at Zenni.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.